The U.S. bans more Chinese companies ahead of trade talks. I'm David Brancaccio. The Commerce Department has added additional Chinese companies to a punitive list. This means those companies can no longer buy U.S. components without special permission from Washington. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer is covering this from Washington. Nancy, how many companies are on this list?
There are eight, David, and they are all tech companies. They make things like surveillance cameras, facial recognition technology. 20 Chinese public security bureaus are also on the list. And some of the companies have issued statements saying they're disappointed by the U.S. decision. Others are insisting the blacklisting won't affect their daily operations.
And what is the stated reason for this?
Well, the Commerce Department says these companies and the security bureaus have been implicated in human rights violations as part of China's campaign to target Muslim ethnic minorities. The United Nations says China is holding more than a million Uyghurs and other Muslims in mass detention centers. The Commerce Department says it wants to ensure that U.S. technology isn't used to, quote, repress defenseless minority populations. And this blacklisting announcement comes at a very interesting time, David, just a few days before high-level meetings are set to start in Washington between top U.S. and Chinese trade negotiators. They're trying to resolve the U.S.-China trade war.
All right. Our Nancy Marshall-Genzer in Washington, thank you. Let's do the numbers. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are each down 0.6%. FTSE in London down 0.2%. The British pound fell sharply today, down 0.5% to the dollar, $1.22, amid reports UK-EU negotiations over Brexit are breaking down. The U.S. and Japan have signed a new trade agreement. Here's Marketplace's Erica Barris.
The president was able to leverage his relationship with Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe to make this agreement happen, says Matthew Goodman with the Center for Strategic and International Studies.
I think the Trump administration went after the low-hanging fruit here, as opposed to trying to go for much more difficult deals in the region and beyond.
The deal eliminates tariffs on some agricultural products that went into place when President Trump pulled out of the Trans-Pacific Partnership. American beef and pork farmers will be some of the big winners. So will companies that sell digital software, content, and data. The new agreement eases digital commerce rules. Gary Huffbauer with the Peterson Institute for International Economics says that's forward-looking.
Digital is the big thing. That is the growing feature of global commerce today.
But one sticking point isn't covered by the new agreement, says Jonathan Doe, a professor at Villanova University.
It doesn't address the largest share of U.S.-Japan trade, which is in the auto sector.
The deal leaves open the possibility that the Trump administration could raise tariffs on cars. I'm Erica Barris for Marketplace.
Twenty-two states prohibit a company from firing someone because they're lesbian, gay, or transgender. That leaves 28 other states. Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 forbids discrimination, quote, because of race, color, religion, sex, or national origin. Today, the U.S. Supreme Court will hear oral arguments about whether federal law prohibiting discrimination because of sex applies to sexual orientation or identity. The Trump administration argues it doesn't. Jillian Thomas is a senior staff attorney at the American Civil Liberties Union that has been working to clarify this. Ms. Thomas, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
I assume this phrase, because of sex, will be at the center of this. The Solicitor General of the United States believes the words because of sex refer to being biologically male or female. It does not, the Solicitor General wrote in a brief, refer to sexual orientation. But that's at the center of this.
Absolutely. And our position is that it's really inextricable, sexual orientation or gender identity for that matter, and sex. Think of the two gay male plaintiffs at the heart of the sexual orientation cases. They have romantic attraction for men. That obviously was because of their sex that they experienced negative employment actions, both of them fired. The plaintiff at the heart of the gender identity case was assigned the gender male at birth, but presents as female. If she had been assigned female at birth, she would not have experienced any problems. Additionally, the Supreme Court's jurisprudence going back several decades at this point is that where sex stereotypes are what drive an adverse action by an employer. So the idea that you don't look the way a woman, quote unquote, should look or act the way a man should act, that's a form of sex discrimination. And that's obviously really what's at the heart of sexual orientation and gender identity discrimination, that you're not conforming to what your employer thinks a man or a woman should be like.
One of the three cases is the one involving the skydiving instructor, Donald Zarda. He was teaching someone to skydive. She somehow felt uncomfortable and he got fired?
Yeah, in an effort to make her feel more comfortable, given a skydiving instructor has to be in extremely close contact, in fact, sort of tethered to the customer for the jump, he told her that he was gay so that she would feel a little less squeamish about being bound physically to a man. But it backfired. She did feel uncomfortable about that disclosure and told her boyfriend, who then told Zarda's boss, who thereafter fired him. Whatever the reason was at the time, by the time the case was in court, there was no question that Zarda claimed it was his sexual orientation, and the employer was claiming that's not a protected category.
Jillian Thomas with the ACLU is author of the book Because of Sex, One Law, 10 Cases in 50 Years. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
We reached Jillian in D.C., where it's her plan to listen firsthand to the oral arguments today at the Supreme Court. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio, and you're listening to the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.